AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Sam with you here on a Monday afternoon. Sam, how you doing in there?
Pretty good over here. How's it going?
All right. And here, have a good Thanksgiving on your side?
Yep. Lots of food.
Any political debates? I know you and your dad don't always see eye to eye politically.
We avoided it pretty well.
Okay, yeah. I largely did with my family as well. Although most of my family members actually tend to lean in the same direction as me. Well, happy to be joined today by State Senator Steve Swaczynski, representing portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka in the State Senate, as he's live in studio with us for the entire hour, our periodic check-ins with Senator Swaczynski. And, well, Steve, thanks so much for joining us today on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
Absolutely. So I'll ask you as well, how was your Thanksgiving? Did you stick around or go out of town?
We were local this year, so it was good. It was a lot of fun. And we don't have the political conversations because everybody's on the same page, so.
Oh, you largely get to avoid those as well.
Yeah, we're lucky that way. We have one libertarian, but and he's good. He's good, but yeah, everybody's on the same page.
That's good. Well, that's uneventful then on the three of us parts. No political disputes. Because that can always get contentious during the holiday time. So were you the host of the holiday gathering?
We were the host for one. Okay. We had two, Thursday and Friday. So we were the hosts on Friday, and Thursday we were at my brother-in-law's. So.
Oh, man, that's back-to-back days of turkey. Hopefully you're not too tired after that.
Yeah, Saturday night there was some naps.
I'm sure there was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for me, I just stuck around in town, had a nice little small gathering with my immediate family, so that was fun to do as well right here in Eden Prairie, eating all that good turkey. So, yeah, definitely good to always get together with the family every once in a while.
Yep, that's true.
Absolutely. So, coming up on the show today, Steve, I figure we're going to talk about a number of topics. I think the first part of the show, we're going to stick more towards the national political topics, because even though you're, of course, someone who serves in the state legislature, there's a lot of times where people actually want to get your take on the national issues, especially being that you're a former government teacher over at Eden Prairie High School up until 2016. But later on in the show, we are going to talk about some local topics, including marijuana and vaping, because that's been in the news recently. And as I understand, you recently held a forum regarding marijuana legalization, it sounded like.
Yeah, it was very well attended. It surprised me how many people showed up.
Interesting, yeah. So we'll get towards that maybe in the second half or the second segment of the show, kind of depending on where the conversation goes. By the way, you're welcome to join the conversation at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Also send us an email, comment at am950radio.com, or we're also streaming up on Facebook. Hey there, Facebook. You can leave us a comment as well if you happen to be watching today. So let's dive right into some national topics for today, because I think the last time you and I chatted, Steve, we did not have the impeachment trial going on quite yet. I know the Democrats at that point, when was it the last time we talked? Maybe October, something like that. There were some rumblings about maybe going into impeachment, but now, of course, we are officially there. And boy, it would be really fascinating to be a student in your government class if you had still been teaching, especially now with the way some of these hearings have gone and some of the bombshell testimony we've had so far in the hearings.
Yeah, it's sad that it takes an impeachment to hook people into the political process. But I have seen a resurgence, if you will, of political awareness, of people venting and coming forward and having an opinion on the impeachment process. I think the House is just doing their constitutional duty. Mm-hmm. So if as of now, I'm totally proud of my representatives. The Dean Phillips is doing a great job. And so we'll see how this plays out. But the House has the sole power of impeachment. And they found some offenses that are pretty egregious. And so let's see how it goes.
Yeah, and at least in my opinion, definitely pretty serious once we got to the Sondland testimony, among others. Yeah, some pretty damning evidence thrown out there against the president. So getting your perspective as a government teacher, this would be a lot different, I think, to teach as compared to 1998 when we had the Bill Clinton impeachment, because as I remember, you were actually teaching government at that point during the Clinton impeachment.
Yeah, and that had some sexual issues
right.
that made it more what's the right word?
Like gossipy or kind of tabloid type thing.
Yes. Yeah. And so it had that feel to it at first. And once you were able to elevate the conversation from sex with an intern to, you know, obstruction of justice and perjury, which were the actual charges against him, then you could have this intelligent conversation. I think that's what's going to happen through this. Right now, everybody's like throwing out those quid pro quo type words, and eventually there'll be some charges by the House, and then that's when the American people and our students will start getting into it. So, and we'll see how it plays out at the Senate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I'm kind of with you on that. They probably will end up impeaching him in the House. And then, of course, we get to an entirely different scenario when it moves on to the Senate, because contrary to what a lot of people think, in fact, I even made this mistake, but it's actually not Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who presides over the Senate trial. It's actually the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, correct?
Yeah.
So it'll be a much different scenario, because originally I thought, well, Mitch McConnell can either just say, oh, we don't want to have a trial, let's skip it, or might do some other, well, shenanigans maybe there. But if it's actually Roberts, who largely tries to come off as nonpartisan, sometimes he's successful at that, sometimes he's not, it's certainly going to be a lot different than if we had someone political like a Mitch McConnell possibly leading a Senate trial.
Yeah, and I think was it Rehnquist? Rehnquist did a very good job during the Senate trial. But the whole time, people are going to be like 67 votes to find him guilty. It's just not going to happen. But it's important the House does their job and the Senate does their job. And I hope the final vote's not along partisan lines, because that's just going to further divide the nation.
Yeah, absolutely, if we end up with that 53-47 vote or whatever the margin is. I think that's what it is in favor of the Republicans.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, which could put some potentially vulnerable senators in some interesting positions, like Cory Gardner, Susan Collins. Who am I thinking of? The Iowa senator, Ernst. Yeah, Joni Ernst. Yeah, maybe they would be tempted to cross the line. But as you said, yeah, you'd still need, what, 14 or 15 overall to actually remove him from office. And, boy, you want to talk about a fascinating political time. If, even though I don't think this is very likely, if they were to actually remove him from office, we have no idea how that would actually look, because even though he's had two presidents get impeached in American history— well, they were never actually convicted and removed from office. Andrew Johnson came up, what was it, one vote short? And then, of course, Nixon resigned. Or Nixon didn't even face the impeachment trial. Yeah, he resigned ahead of time, and then Clinton was acquitted. So it would be very unprecedented to figure out what that actually looks like, removing a president.
Yeah, and one that may not step down.
That's what I would be afraid of as well.
I mean, I'm guilty, but I'm not stepping down.
Yeah, the only scenario I could see them maybe convicting him is if they're looking at polling data showing that he's going to get walloped in the 2020 election, and they're thinking, all right, well, if Trump is going to lose, maybe we're better off hitching ourselves to Mike Pence or somebody else. That's about the only scenario where I could see them maybe actually removing him from office. And, yeah, I don't know where we would go from there, because technically, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's really nothing in the Constitution that actually says how you remove a president from office.
No, it's not in there. The 25th Amendment does have a clause about removing a president from office if he's incapable to discharge the powers and duties. So I guess you could invoke the 25th if, after they were found guilty in the Senate, they didn't step down. Maybe that's how you would get rid of them. But I wish the cabinet would have a secret meeting, and maybe they have, and just went, you know, this guy is just not presidential material, and we can do better, but they haven't.
Yeah, and I'm still very concerned that, yeah, he's made some unannounced visits to the doctor's office. I think there's even a rumor he has a doctor that's been traveling around with him to every event. So, yeah, it's kind of nerve-wracking when you think about that aspect. But going to, you said it's the 25th Amendment, correct?
Yeah.
What exactly does that state? Is that just the cabinet that votes on removing the president?
Yeah, it takes, they invoke the 25th Amendment, it's Section 4, and it has a clause to remove the power— remove the president, and it's a majority of the cabinet, so that'd be 8 or 9, and the vice president. So those 8 or 9 people could foreseeably remove the president. All it does is they send a letter to the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House saying they don't believe the president is able to carry out the duties, and then Congress would have to act. But that would be just along a simple majority. Theoretically, under Section 4, it would just take 9 people to remove the President of the United States.
So, okay, running through this, so depending on how many cabinet members there actually are, I think it's, as you said, like 17 or something like that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying 8 or 9.
Yeah, you just need a simple majority, not a supermajority or a unanimous consent. But then from there, it actually would still go to Congress, you said, correct? Okay.
But simple majority.
Oh, so from there, it would be, so it would be both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, that would have to vote to remove the president.
That they believe what the president, they believe what the vice president and the majority of the cabinet is saying.
Oh, sure.
And if they don't, and then the president has 48 hours or 72 to respond. And then if he says, no, I'm fine, they're nuts, they're trying to have a coup, then Congress has to decide under the darkness of night which body is telling the truth. And so we've never crossed that path, but I sure would be like to love to be teaching that.
If I'd love to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, it'd be a great made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, because I'm thinking this through. I've, of course, heard of that aspect before where the cabinet can remove a president. But, yeah, there's a lot more layers to that, talking about how it's just a simple majority among the cabinet. And then as you're talking about in Congress, it actually wouldn't be a full trial.
No.
It would just be a simple vote and it would just be a majority in both houses.
Yep.
So you'd only need 51 senators and, 218 members of the House. Wow, and it has to take place within 48 hours.
The president has 48 hours to respond. They're nuts. They're trying to remove. Writing about how quick Congress has to decide, I don't think.
Interesting, okay.
But Section 4 is just a paragraph, so if somebody's listening in, it takes 3 minutes to read.
All right, Mr. Constitutional guy here. When was that actually passed, the 25th Amendment?
Boy, 70, it was a result of Kennedy, because you can remove the president if they resign, if they're, or if they're, resign or they die. But Kennedy, say he had lived and he was just incapacitated, he doesn't resign. It's not an impeachable offense to be brain dead. And he, so he can't be, so they put in this clause saying if he's unable to carry out the powers and duties of the office, we can remove him this way.
Yeah, and they can largely.
So it was a result of Kennedy's assassination that it was in
that's
there.
Why, yeah. I was wondering when this actually
was
passed.
Yeah, I think it was 67 or 68. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it does make some sense in that aspect. If you do have a president who is basically brain dead or in a coma, what exactly do you do?
You invoke the 25th Amendment, and then no one challenges it because he's in a coma or she's, you know, brain dead.
Yeah, and of course, as you're saying, you can also use that in other scenarios as well. For instance, having a president who is just, well, nuts, which is me speaking, not necessarily you, a guy who I think definitely is kind of fallen past that threshold where at least, I think he's more than incapacitated with some of the mental gaffes he's been making over the past few months and years. Hey, let's take a phone call and talk to David. Must be listening online because he is calling from Texas.
Wow, great.
Hey, David, are you listening on the TuneIn app?
Well, I'm listening on an app. I don't know if it's the TuneIn app.
But, all right.
I'm streaming you.
Oh, this is David the Trucker, isn't it?
It is David the Trucker.
Oh, whereabouts are you in Texas right now?
I just passed Waco. Ooh.
Gotcha. All right.
And I'm headed east. So anyway, you guys were talking about impeachment, and you were talking about the 25th Amendment. But I think that Trump has kind of protected himself against impeachment by having so many temporary people, you know, stand-in people. You know, there's nobody been confirmed by the Senate. I don't think they have enough people. And also, one thing, Robert Pilot has this new show, and he's been looking for a name, and I got a name, and maybe you can tell him that I had came up with a good name.
Oh, yeah, I got to hear
Pilots,
this.
Pilots. Progressive Perspective.
Oh, Progressive Perspective. Yeah.
Well, I know, good alliteration.
I like that. I'm glad you went with the three P's because that was kind of the theme he was looking for when he was coming up with that name. Party kind of ended up just being the default. But yeah, I'll pass that along. Pilots Progressive Perspective. Kind of a tongue twister, but I like the three P's in there, David.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, we'll catch you later, David. Thanks so much for calling. So, yeah, as David is talking about there, yeah, of course the president gets to appoint their own cabinet, which does kind of lead to maybe you thinking, well, oh yeah, why would his own cabinet members actually vote to remove him? But there are some in there that could possibly say, well, this guy is nuts, let's get rid of him. But then it actually leads to another question I'm thinking of here. Do people who are temporarily, or who were temporarily appointed and not confirmed by the Senate, do they get a vote in that matter? Boy, there could be some real legal issues here if we ever got to that point.
Yeah, and I think the Supreme Court would have to weigh in on that because the what is their title? Interim Secretary?
Interim Secretary of, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, because they haven't been confirmed. So do they get the same vote as a confirmed secretary?
Wow. Yeah, and boy, that would be a heck of a decision to watch from the Supreme Court, because I think when you look at the Supreme Court, you obviously would have the two Trump appointees, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, probably side with Trump. Clarence Thomas probably would side with him as well. I'm guessing Alito would probably also be on Trump's side. But then you have John Roberts, who wants to still maintain that the Supreme Court is independent. He would be interesting to watch in that type of scenario, whether you're talking about, yeah, who gets to vote in terms of the cabinet or what happens if something like that were to move to the full both bodies of Congress. He would be an interesting figure to watch, just being that he was appointed by Bush. He's largely been conservative, but now that he's kind of turned into the swing vote, yeah, he does definitely want to still kind of keep the court at least somewhat nonpartisan. So, yeah, he's definitely an interesting figure.
Yeah, he was the fifth vote on Affordable Care.
Mm-hmm. And some other ones as well, where he's ended up siding against Republicans. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here on our 4 o'clock show and come back. And, Steve, I briefly want to get your perspective on the Democratic presidential primary. We'll talk about that in the second segment then. I think second half of the show, we'll touch on some local topics, including vaping and marijuana legalization, all on the way here on the Repartee.
Hi, this is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. It's been great working with so many of the passionate AM 950 listeners over the years. We have realized how important AM 950 is to the community. I want to see AM 950 continue to grow and continue to thrive into the future. To help continue to grow, Snap Construction will be putting up proceeds to assist the station in marketing on social media. Snap Construction encourages you to do your part by liking and sharing the content on AM 950 social media platforms.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. Ryan has always told me the best time to get work done is during the colder months of the year because demand is much lower. He is backing that up again by offering 30% off labor on windows and siding from now until the end of December. Call Snap Construction now to get 30% off labor on windows and siding. As always, Snap Construction stands by their work with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Trust the company AM950 trusts, Snap Construction, arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, and window contractor in the metro area. Get a free estimate by calling 612-333-SNAP or find them online at snapconstruction.com. Financing options available.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture. It helped me get my job, helped me pay for my house.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we transform the lives of men and support Minnesota's environment by working towards zero waste. Our approach reaffirms each man's dignity and supports self-sufficiency. Better Futures Minnesota is a work training model. Through our reuse, retail warehouse, and supervised work crews with specialized in residential and commercial building deconstruction, property maintenance, appliance recycling, and janitorial services, we demonstrate ways to employ hard-to-employ men on a pathway to independence. Hire our work crews at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads, too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson joined by State Senator Steve Swazinski, who represents portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. And Steve, as we were chatting about during the break, kind of a nice event coming up here at Eden Prairie High School on Wednesday. Civics 101 at EPHS.
You like that title?
That is right up your alley.
Yeah. Secretary of State Steve Simon's coming to Eden Prairie High School Wednesday night to talk about the election, the upcoming election, in a nonpartisan way. He's going to talk about why we went from caucuses to primaries, mm-hmm. and what are the advantages of primaries. And I don't know how accurate this is, but somebody told me that we could be the first state in the nation to vote this year because of early voting.
Oh, really? Okay.
And so people that early vote will actually be voting. Someone told me this, so I've never confirmed it. We could be voting before the New Hampshire primary. So we could be the first primary in the country, theoretically.
Take that, New Hampshire and Iowa. Yeah. Getting all that attention early on.
If it's true.
Yeah. I'll have to look into that, because if it is, I have a new selling point to give to some of these presidential candidates we've been trying to get here on AM 950.
Yeah,
and we've only had Yang come on the show once. Yeah, we haven't had any of the other guys come on yet. We're working on Steyer, but
Yang's enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's definitely got the Yang Gang hashtag going, and yeah. He has an interesting base of support as well, being that he has, obviously people that are progressives, but also a number of conservatives as well that kind of work in that tech industry that are very concerned about automation. Yeah, it's a really fascinating base that actually supports him, and he's kind of kept ticking along, making each and every debate, and yeah, he's been a really fascinating candidate to follow along with.
Do you think young people... And when I say young, I guess I'm throwing out this end of the age of 30, maybe. Is he a candidate that demographic could latch on to, do you think?
Maybe, although I think there's still other candidates that are kind of appealing to them. I think Bernie Sanders is certainly among them. I'm 34 myself, so I'm technically not part of it anymore. But, yeah, he's definitely...
Then let me say under the age of 35.
35, yeah. In the coveted 18 to 34 demo in the advertising world. Yeah, I'm not really sure, because I feel like if he was actually an established politician, he would probably have a better chance, because I feel like that could be maybe a reason why he hasn't quite gotten enough support to the point where he would be a real serious front runner. I mean, not saying he's running a bad campaign. It's actually pretty amazing when you consider he's gone from a relatively unknown businessman to actually someone who's getting 3 or 4% of the vote in several primary polls. But yeah, if he continues his political career, I could see him maybe catching on with that younger demographic. Hmm. So how did we get there? Oh, yeah, that's right, talking about presidential candidates.
Yep.
And
yep.
Yeah, only one who's appeared here on AM 950, working on Steyer. But, boy, I'd love to get Biden, Bernie, Warren on the show. But maybe I'll have to bring up your selling point saying, hey, we technically can possibly vote here first in Minnesota, if it's true.
You know, I got to look into that.
Yeah,
I've
so
said
do I.
This like 3 times now without looking into it, so I might not even be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
We are early voting and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a much different system of we're, of course, having here in 2020 in Minnesota that we're going to. Isn't it technically a hybrid of a caucus and a primary where it's not really fully in one direction, where we do a primary, but people can still go to their caucuses and still meet with their friends and neighbors and have resolutions get put through and all that other fun stuff?
Yeah, I've loved caucuses. I just think they're the poster child of the town hall forum going back to New England in the 1600s. And so I just love that. Took pride that we were a caucus state, but I guess you had such success in 2016 with our caucuses and lines, you know, getting into the high schools and churches and whatnot. And so we decided to try this primary and see how we do. And but we'll still have the caucuses, but I'm anxious to see how many people actually attend the caucus when all they have to do. But I've had a friend that worked second shift his entire life, and he used to complain to me about caucuses because he never could go. And I know places could give you the night, you know, the time off, but it was without pay. And so he could, he's never been to a caucus, and so his voice has never been heard. So for that guy, primaries are make sense. So
952-946-6205. Do have a couple of open phone lines if you'd like to join the conversation. Yeah, I'm with you. I hope caucuses don't actually get hurt turnout-wise, because people now, of course, do have the option of just voting in the primary and essentially leaving. Although technically you could still do that before during the caucus system, couldn't you? You could just make your presidential preference and then take off. But I'm hoping, yeah, that doesn't actually lead to people not showing up to caucuses anymore and thinking.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of good stuff you can do in there, and that's actually how you can set a lot of your party's platform, because that's actually when you come up with your party's platform, a lot of those proposals actually come from those local caucuses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I hope you're right.
Mm-hmm. We shall see once we hit our caucuses here in Minnesota next year, along with our primaries. Let's go to Philip in Mendota Heights before we head to our next break. Hey there, Philip. What's on your mind?
Caucuses. They will happen every 2 years in February. Next February will be caucuses. Caucuses are where you do the party business.
Right.
Caucuses are where you elect your representatives to go up to the Senate district from your precinct. And at the Senate District Convention, they elect representatives to go to the county and state levels. Mm-hmm. And when you are at the state level and you have to have people for the Electoral College, they run there and get elected from our representatives at the state level. And if your party wins the state, they go to vote, and if it doesn't, the other parties does.
All right. Hey, thanks for –
yeah,
Philip,
keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a big campaign all along to be the representatives all the way up, and they also do all the endorsing of state senate, state representative, governor, lieutenant governor. All of those get endorsements from the people that are at the level. So – the Senate district does the endorsing of the state Senate and representatives. The state does it for all the other state offices and so on. And it's if you come to the caucus, you can try to be a delegate to the Senate district and all the way up. But you have to be there in order to do that, or there's a way you can file a thing that says, I can't get to it because but I want to be a caucus, and then people will read your name and why you want to be a caucus member, and you're in the vote. But that has to get there before the caucus meeting.
Yeah, and Philip, you seem like you're well-versed in how the system...
I'm impressed, Philip. Are you a caucus chair?
No.
You're just someone who knows a lot about it, and I'm glad you participate in that, because
I've been voting since Carter, and I campaigned for Nixon in 72.
I got you. All right. Wow, you're a Nixon
slash
Carter person.
I've been burned once, and I didn't get burned again.
Wow.
You might be the only person I've ever heard of that voted for both Nixon and Carter. But, unique.
I didn't vote. I couldn't vote for Nixon. I said I campaigned.
Oh, you campaigned for him. Okay.
That your election came before my birthday.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, Philip, I'm glad you brought up all that information, because it's important to participate in caucuses, because I'm hoping we don't run into a situation where people just vote in the primary and think they're done, because this is actually how you affect local and also state government, is by participating in these caucuses.
Yeah, the caucuses are very important for people to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to go up and do anything else the first year. There's very few officers at the precinct level. Officers at the precinct level have monthly meetings at the state Senate district levels.
And for all and thank you. And for all you young people out there that think you have to be 18, you have to be 18 on election day to participate in precinct caucuses. So,
You don't have to be at the time. Yep, that's right.
Exactly. Hey, Philip, thanks so much for calling in today and talking about the importance of caucuses. Appreciate that. By the way, Philip, if you're not a current caucus chair, I think you should probably become one.
Yeah, I'll say.
Because
or
someone
train
from
them.
Yeah, exactly. That's rare you actually get that from someone who's not a caucus chair that knows that much about the system.
Right.
Because even I don't, and I generally follow politics pretty closely.
Yeah.
Hey, tell you what, Steve, let's continue our conversation on the other side of the break, because I want to touch on a couple of topics that might come up during the next legislative session in January, including marijuana legalization, also vaping, and some other subjects as well. So we'll do that up next here on our 4 o'clock show, but we'll get to the news first.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, December 2nd, 2019. I'm Dan Hyman. Neither President Donald Trump nor his lawyers will take part in an impeachment hearing when the process moves to the House Judiciary Committee Wednesday. A letter to the chairman of Judiciary from the White House counsel protested that the process was unlikely to be fair for Trump, echoing ongoing Republican attacks. Some Democrats have scoffed at this, pointing out that the president is blocking important witnesses from testifying and now seems unwilling to even present a defense. Meanwhile, one of Trump's allies, the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, is calling for the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff to testify. Schiff, a Democrat, says he will not appear. He says Republican calls for him to testify show they are not serious about the substance of the charges that Trump tried to extort dirt on a domestic political opponent from Ukraine by withholding military aid for several months earlier this year. Six states are looking at banning the sale and marketing of e-cigarettes. In Maryland, the proposal to do that comes with what supporters describe as an additional effort towards social justice.
The legislation is sponsored in the House of Delegates by Prince George's County Democrat Derek Davis and is planned for the next General Assembly session starting next month. It calls for a partial or all-out ban on the tobacco products and also targets menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars, according to Laura Hale with the state's American Heart Association chapter. She says that in addition to tackling a public health crisis, the potential ban is a fight for social justice.
Communities of color have been targeted, especially around menthol cigarettes and flavored little cigars, for decades. And so if we don't include those products, we're leaving those communities behind.
As of November 20th, more than 2,000 people in the nation had been sickened from e-cigarettes, and 47 deaths were reported to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
This is PNS.
Extreme rain events and wide swings in temperatures are just some of the climate change threats facing Minnesota farmers. And their advocates say federal policymakers need to do more to make sure farmers are protected from crop losses caused by changing weather patterns. This year in Minnesota, many farmers have struggled with the fall harvest due to muddy fields. Tara Ritter with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says that's just one example showing that now is the time to act, so more farmers can adopt mitigation practices.
The more soil health that a farm has, the better it's going to be able to absorb water, so it'll be able to adapt better to drought and flood.
A new report from the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says in addition to crop losses, climate change also threatens livestock. The USDA does offer conservation programs to help make environmental improvements to farms, but the report suggests it isn't enough. Ritter says a lot of mitigation practices, such as cover cropping or no-till farming, can be implemented by farmers without state or federal assistance. But she says to have a greater impact, federal ag officials need to rethink their spending priorities.
There are, you know, currently a lot of dollars that are targeted towards, large-scale animal operations. And, you know, one thing that we're advocating for then is shifting those dollars towards different types of grazing systems instead.
Those grazing systems would mean using a more strategic approach to leaving livestock in the field, thus having a more positive impact on the environment and, in turn, on the land. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
A recent study found 2 million Americans, often in poor and minority communities, lack access to clean water. That's a huge issue for the Navajo Nation, in spite of long-standing water rights in an area where those are precious.
Study Closing the Water Access Gap says while the Navajo tribe owns water rights, 30% of the more than 330,000 residents on the reservation must drive for up to 4 hours to haul barrels of water to their homes. Sarah Porter with the Kyle Center for Water Policy says the lack of resources along with inaction by the federal government keeps many Navajo from access to clean water.
Funding for infrastructure so that they can actually benefit from that water. It doesn't do any good to have a giant water right if you don't have the things you need to take advantage of the water.
The study is produced by the group Dig Deep and the U.S. Water Alliance. The Indian Health Service estimates that it would cost $200 million to provide basic water and sanitation access to all Navajo homes. Mark Richardson reporting.
I'm Dan Hyman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
There are so many times in life when it's important to have a plan. I'm attorney Rachel Schroman, and I can tell you from experience that so much pain can be prevented with an estate plan or an arrangement for long-term care costs. I work with families with many different dynamics and budgets, and my goal is always to give them peace of mind while helping them protect their legacy. Learn more about me at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Is your business being pulled under by a tide of constant threats? Hackers, ransomware, security breaches? What if you had people who could navigate you to safe water, then teach you how to swim? Hi, Mark Sommerfeld of Rymark with a unique offer, a free security assessment. We'll uncover hidden threats, hidden costs, and hidden opportunities to help navigate your business. Call 651-328-8900 or go to RymarkIT.com to schedule your free security assessment.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Tonight's going to be cloudy with a low around 19. Tomorrow is sunny with a high near 31. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 32. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 32. And Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 22. Shop local with one of the AM950 advertisers for the holidays. It's a great way to not only support AM950, but also local businesses and shops. Consider picking up a gift card for your friends or family. Full list of advertisers at AM950radio.com.
Back on AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, joined in studio by State Senator Steve Swazinski. As we're going to transition now to talking about some topics that might come up at the state legislature, either in this upcoming term or maybe in 2021 and 2022. And one of them is marijuana legalization. And Steve, you and I were kind of alluding to this earlier. You actually had, was it a forum on marijuana legalization? Or talk a little bit about that.
It was Majority Leader in the Minnesota House, Ryan mm-hmm. Winkler, had about a dozen listening sessions, and one of them happened to be in Eden Prairie a couple weeks ago. And okay. I don't know, maybe 150, maybe 200. I mean, the room was packed at the community center here in Eden Prairie, and I was just really surprised. I was expecting like a dozen, maybe 20 people. People really are interested in this issue, and so we want to get it right. And I don't know, you know, what your listeners think about what the right course of action is, but there's definitely some issues here that are percolating to the top that are beyond just the legalization of marijuana. There's all these side issues, and so it's an interesting issue.
What are some of the side issues you're kind of thinking
like
of?
Like social justice mm-hmm. as an issue mm-hmm. of a lot of people talk about, well, the revenue we're gaining is a good thing, but mm-hmm. if we tax it too much, people will still go to the black market where it'll be
sure.
cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that tipping point where you want to buy the regulated, mm-hmm. legal tax stuff, but you don't want to pay, you know, double what you would pay from the guy you've been buying it from when it was mm-hmm. illegal. And so there's that issue. Will under the age of 21 group go up, or will they go down in use? And data from Colorado suggests that those numbers don't change after legalization.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And so it just runs the gamut. How much regulation?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, well, we're going to ban, there was a working group, we'll ban flavored marijuana. Well, we're flavored,
yeah, like vaping
and flavored marijuana. And somebody, a woman, weighed in and said, I like peppermint tobacco vaping. And you're going to ban what I like to smoke. And she's like, you know, 50 or something.
Right.
Because kids. And so it's just, they're more complicated than just flicking a switch. Those two issues of vaping and marijuana.
And there's another aspect as well that comes into that. And that, of course, is maybe expunging the records of criminals who were convicted for minor offenses for marijuana. That certainly enters the gamut as well. Weren't we actually pretty close in the last legislative session to actually doing something in that aspect in terms of decriminalizing marijuana or maybe helping people with records that just had minor offenses?
Yeah, the House did some stuff on that. The Senate, which again is controlled by the Republicans, I don't even think we had, I don't think it even came up in a hearing.
Oh, it didn't even make a vote. Okay.
Correct.
Now, I know obviously coming up in the next legislative session, it's mostly focused on bonding, not so much policy issues, but are we expected to maybe take up any important policy issues like a marijuana legalization or gun reform or anything like that?
I think marijuana, I think insulin, clearly within the first week, I mean, we're going to have closure to that. I don't think we'll have a special session at this point because we get together February 11th. So so anyways, insulin, the recreational marijuana thing, it's interesting how many people are showing up at these events around the state. So I think they want us to at least make a decision, one way or the other. So I think those two things and some educational issues are popping up, I'm hearing from. And so there'll be some policy. Invite Twin Metals and PolyMet up on the range are still being talked about. But mostly it's going to be bonding.
And as you said, 150 to 200 people actually showed up at this forum, which is a lot because, as you said, normally at those types of things, you get, what, maybe one or two dozen people that actually go?
Yeah, and it was just, it's so interesting. There's so many issues that there was a guy that, a couple that were there that their kid gets medical marijuana, but because of the regulations on medical marijuana, she can't afford it. So legalizing recreational marijuana would bring down the price of medical marijuana, and that's why they were there. And that had never entered my brain.
Right.
I mean, just things like that you meet people, that this could benefit a lot more people than harm. So.
Yeah, especially on that medical side as well. Yeah, I didn't really think of that aspect as well if you legalize the recreational side. And then the aspect you brought up too, which is, yeah, how much do you actually tax it? Because so often when we hear this conversation, we say, well, look at how much potential revenue you could be bringing into the state coffers. But you do have to kind of reach that balancing act where if you say, I mean, this would be like an absurd amount, but let's say you put like a 75% tax on marijuana, obviously people are going to say, well, that's way more expensive than I would pay, as you're talking about with whoever you might be getting that from now. So you do have to kind of find that right amount in terms of how much you actually do put as a tax on marijuana or other products like that. So yeah, probably a lot of interesting conversations would come up if we get, well, to some pretty serious discussions on that. Who knows if that'll actually happen, being that I believe the majority leader, Gazelka, is pretty strongly against marijuana legalization, correct?
Yes, he is. So I don't think the Senate will do anything, but the House and the governor's office, and I think the majority of Minnesotans. But we'll find out. We'll see.
Let's go to the phone lines before we take our final commercial break. We got Randy in St. Cloud. Hey there, Randy.
Hey, thanks for putting me on. I was at that forum in Eden Prairie. I drove all the way down from St. Cloud.
Thank you for being there.
Yeah.
How many people do you think were there, Randy? Am I off saying 150 to 200?
I would say 100 to 150.
Okay.
There was a lot of people, though. That room was pretty full. Yeah, and I was surprised also that it was that full. One point, well, the point you brought up about the couple who wanted it for their kid, but they couldn't afford it because of the regulations, a lot of the regulations happened because Dayton succumbed to the pressure from the police, and the police didn't want to have anything to do with this. And I think a big piece of that, if you took away one of the main reasons the police wanted to stay illegal is they get civil forfeiture. And as their funding keeps getting pinched for the last 25 years or whatever, this civil forfeiture has been a big part of how a lot of different police departments help augment their revenue because they find somebody with weed, they can take all kinds of stuff from them. And that's crazy. I mean, I know people up in Duluth who had their SUV and their boat confiscated because they found weed in their car. And it's like, wow. So those kind of issues could go away. And the other thing about legalization, it doesn't have to be recreational. You could still do it medicinally, but allow people to grow, you know, I don't know, 6-10 plants. Grow some plants. Each person could grow their own. And that would probably kind of PO the people who want to get into it for the money. Mm-hmm. But that would take all kinds of issues off the table.
And even as you're talking about, Randy, if we don't go the route to full recreational legalization, at least in the short term, there are some other ideas we can have in terms of lessening the regulations on marijuana, because I believe of Minnesota being among the states that have at least medicinal marijuana legalized, we have, I believe, the most strict regulations in the entire country where...
Yeah, you can't smoke it. They mm-hmm. can't give you weed that you smoke, mm-hmm. which is crazy. That's the cheapest and easiest way to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I know? I don't know.
You know a lot.
All right. Hey, Randy, thanks so much for calling in today. Do appreciate that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. The clock is flying by. We got one more commercial break to take before we wrap up the show. Still a couple more topics to address. We'll continue on marijuana legalization and maybe touch on vaping as well here as we're joined by Steve Swazinski, state senator representing portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman for Continental Diamond. The experts at Continental Diamond have years of industry experience and know all the latest trends. And this holiday season, they can help you find that timeless, unforgettable gift, no matter your budget. Find out why the readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler in the Twin Cities for the last 10 years. Continental Diamond, adjacent to the west end of St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com. That's Continental Diamond for the perfect holiday gift. Continental Diamond and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at Victor's1959Cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Wendy, great news.
What's the great news, Robert?
Hey, we're on Wednesdays now at 5 p.m.
That's great. What's the name of the show?
Pilot's Playhouse? I don't know.
Pilot's Playhouse? That's terrible.
That is terrible. Hey, everyone should listen in and see what we come up with.
So what's the new show about?
Well, we'll have local and national news and guests that you don't hear anywhere else.
Wednesdays at 5.
See you then.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. Our station has worked with Barbara from WYSIWYG Web Design for years on everything from logo to print design, and especially for developing our website. She does great work and is great to work with, listening to what our goals and design ideas were while offering new, innovative ideas to create the website we are proud of today. Barbara made sure she understood our station, our goals, and our mission before she started working on our site and made suggestions to help control the cost. Plus, she's friendly, which set us at ease. I recommend Barbara at WYSIWYG Web Design because I know she will deliver an attractive, professional website within the budget you have. She is a local independent business that specializes in helping other local businesses achieve their website and design goals. She can work with nearly any budget and create anything from simple sites to robust custom functionality. To find out more about the company AM950 Trust, go to WYSIWYGWebDesign.com. Spelled out just like it sounds, WYSIWYGWebDesign.com.
Auto Technical needs your help to keep our transportation program going. Social agencies like Workforce Training Center, Tubman Shelter, they rely on our mission of providing transportation to families in need. Donations of vehicles are down 80% because of the new tax laws. We really need vehicle donations to continue our mission. Help us, please. Give a call to Richard at 612-919-5526, autotechnical.org.
We're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Final few minutes of the show. I have a couple more open phone lines if you'd like to join us before the show wraps up, as we are speaking with State Senator Steve Swazinski, representing areas of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. First term state senator, and you made this official just a few days ago that you are seeking re-election in 2020.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I am. I am official now.
You are officially getting back into it, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. And so I didn't even think twice. It wasn't like I was agonizing over the decision. So, I officially made it official a couple weeks ago, last week.
This is kind of the nerdy political part of me coming out here, but this will be an interesting couple of years for you if you happen to get reelected, because, of course, you would face reelection again in 2022 with the way the state constitution is set up. So,
and they could draw
better get used to campaigning.
Yeah, and they could draw me out of the district.
That is very true.
How does that be? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to a couple representatives in my 3 years at the Capitol that lost their seat, if you will. Because of reapportionment.
Fortunately, at least with a governor being a Democrat, that would be Tim Walz, we're guaranteed not to have gerrymandered districts because that was a big problem, obviously, in Wisconsin and some other states. Let's get one more phone call before we wrap up the show today. We got Gary in Minneapolis. Hey there, Gary.
Hi, Brett. I just want to say something quick. You know, Republicans are always pointing the finger at a mess, something really bad. And the darn Democrats did it. And it's always, they look at themselves because they make the mess and then they blame the Democrats. Whether it's a debt or it could be any mess, it's their own mess.
Well, that was one of your quicker phone calls you've ever done there, Gary. Wow. Sam, is that a record? Have we ever had Gary go like less than 15 seconds on a phone call?
I think it's because I warned him we didn't have much time.
All right. I was going to say, Gary, I'm impressed with you, man. Hey, call back tomorrow, Gary. Always one of the biggest fans here of AM 950. So, yeah, looks like we have one more phone call we'll hopefully get to just before we wrap up the show. But, yeah, as you were talking about, you are officially running for state senate in 2020 for election again. And, yeah, you're right. You could end up being an entirely different district. Have there actually been any talks in terms of what districts might look like after 2020, or haven't any of the legislatures gotten that far?
It gets percolated it rises to lower level conversations, but we'll see after the election how that plays out. But we could lose a congressional seat.
Yeah, and that's the bigger deal. Because
right.
I think
in the grand scheme, which is an electoral vote as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, even if you're a Republican voter out there, you should be very concerned, because the metro area is growing faster than greater Minnesota. So you're likely to see, if we lose a congressional seat, you're probably going to see 7 and 8 combined in some form, which would mean probably like one maybe big northern Minnesota district. So either way, participate in the census. An entirely different thing. But yeah, we got to make sure we keep that congressional seat here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. All right, State Senator Steve Swazinski, thanks for joining us on the show today.
As always, Brett, thank you.
All right, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.